The thing is not how you are on your best day, is how can you step up on your worst day. When everything is going terrible, when you're tired, when you're frustrated, when you're edgy, how do you treat other people?
Fuck pain, fuck heartbreak. I'm still in love with life.
From the multicultural headquarters of the future capital of the free-thinking states of America known as Los Angeles, this is the Drunken Taoist Podcast.
On this episode, I get to share with Bilelli and our awesome listeners all about the grand adventure my wife and I had tracking down a clear patch of sky for 4 minutes of eclipse totality. The journey was filled with visits to family we hadn't seen in years, enjoying incredible southern food all along the way, and best of all, travels on the tiny state highways over incredible bridges through small cities and towns, all in search of a destination we weren't yet sure of. It was amazing.
And now, asking you all to spread the words that corporations are not persons, I'm Rich Evers. And my partner in crime, the savage philosopher and middle finger of the gods, Daniele Bolelli, as we invite you to lower the lights, batten down the hatches, and prepare to open your mind. For the Drunken Taoist Podcast begins now.
Welcome back, everybody. Another fine episode of the Drunken Taoist Podcast, episode 255, the Eclipse 2024 episode. Bilelli and Savannah are already off on their Japan visit, but they will be back tomorrow. We're going to record them tomorrow and hear all about their adventure. This one is just going to be about my wife and I's trip all through the South, looking for the perfect place, trying to avoid stormy skies. It was quite an adventure, but in the end, we managed to find an incredible place right on the Mississippi River with some kind folks cranking out a Pink Floyd cover band playing Dark Side of the Moon across the river. These are things I wouldn't ask for even if I could dream about myself. We had a fantastic time, but we'll get all to that in a moment. Before we do, we have to take a moment to thank the folks that helped keep the Drunken Taoist up and running, and that would include our friends at PurestMushrooms.com, Turkey Tail, Cordyceps, Lion's Manes, all kinds of ways to keep your internal fauna happy, keep you alert. Some old pals of the show have put together this incredible website to provide the best quality, purity, and potency of mushrooms on the market at great prices. Turkey Tail, Cordyceps, Lion's Mane, all grown from small independent farms in Canada, Alaska, and the U.S., providing the highest quality, potency, and purity. No additives, no fillers, no irradiation. And using code HISTORYONFIRE will get you a discount on single packages. So check out PurestMushrooms.com. And once your digestion's up and running, be sure to visit DakotaPureBison.com. South Dakota-grown bison from family farms, providing ground bison, jerky, steaks, and roasts, all kinds of delicious things, from meat that is better for you than skinless chicken, because those bisons are always roaming, so they're walking and grazing, keeps it lean and delicious. Use the code HOF10 for a 10% discount at checkout, and that is DakotaPureBison.com. Always want to give a shout out to our friends at SureDesignT-Shirt.com. They've been on our side for over a decade. All kinds of clothing available for everyone in the family. Soft, crinkly cotton. Fantastic designs from mandalas to octopuses. Ganeshas to magic mushrooms. Stylish and fun. Harem pants if you need them. They have these great long hoodies that I think the girls will really enjoy. So, SureDesignT-Shirts.com. And then there's the kind folks who deserve our biggest thanks, sending their own hard-earned funds to help us keep the Drunken Taoist up and running. We thank...
Let the botchering begin.
Daniel Fischel, Stephen McKee, Jonathan Waterlow, Keegan Walsh, Joseph Lord, Nicole Tongi, GlobalHobos.com, Andra Garapetian, Ed and Carrie O, Samuel Rodelli, Thomas Howell, Stephen Rados, Lane Raper, Donald Chip Witten, Luis Pesquera, Yanni Linema, Jesse Rantakangas, Tommy Fung, Aaron Wisner, and Clayton Payne, who was kind enough to pop up and say hello at the observatory a few nights ago. It was a great surprise and was so nice to meet you. Thanks to every one of you for helping us keep this up and running. It is the kindest thing you could possibly do, and we always appreciate it. If you want to join this fine, incredible band of heroes, You can PayPal a few dollars to Bodhi's email address. That's Bodhi, B-O-D-H-I, 1974 at yahoo.com. Or you can also use his direct PayPal link, paypal.me/dbolelli. That's D-B-O-L-E-L-L-I. Another easy way to help us out at no extra cost to you is shopping at the Amazon link that is available on the Drunken Taoist website, thedrunkentaoist.com. And quickly, last but not least, kiva.org. Team Drunken Taoist, 147 members strong, funding over 7,700 loans worth over $219,000, over 98% of which were all repaid on time. You can take $25, you can lend it to somebody who needs it, a stranger in the world. There are over 85 countries available for you to lend to, and the money usually gets back within 6 to 8 months. And when it gets back, you can lend it all over again. It is quite an incredible thing, and your 147 fellow listeners have had a good time doing this over the past, I think, 10 years now. We're looking at finding our way to $250,000 in loans before we know it. Something that just, it warms my heart. I didn't think we'd have this sort of success with it. I was amazed when we got $500 in loans. So it's just been a grand success. And it just shows that there's a lot of great folks out there willing to help folks that are, strangers who need a hand. And why would we ever not want to do that? Anyway, it's time to get to the show. So I'll see you guys on the other side. Have a great episode, and thanks for listening.
Eclipse episode. You had a giant traveling experience. I want to hear all about it.
It was a ridiculous adventure. We planned the best we could, but there's no planning against the weather.
Yeah, of course.
And from the very beginning, all they can do, they do historical models from about 25 years. Mm-hmm. And everything said Texas and Arkansas are going to be clear. Middle of the country is going to be somewhat cloudy. And New England was doomed. And all of it was completely wrong. But we had, years ago, we'd gone to a place called DeGray Lake, Arkansas, which is a big resort there. Mm-hmm. Big hotels and stuff next to it. But in addition, it's camping, and you can go horseback riding, and obviously there's a lake there.
Yeah.
So our plan was totality came right across the top of that. We were going to get a canoe and sit out and watch the eclipse.
How good is that?
The thought of the reflection in the water
was probably
going to be epic. Yeah. And just to be on the safe side, we also got a campground up, I guess it would be west of Indianapolis, because that was another spot. Yeah. Well, we flew in. I mean, even the flying in was crazy, because we figured we took the red eye a week before, so it was the Wednesday before. It's like, we'll get in front of everybody.
Yeah.
No.
Not quite.
This thing was packed to the walls.
Wow.
Because the movement was already going on. They say 40 million people made a serious amount of attempts.
Jesus.
No, it's the biggest move.
That's a lot.
And it's probably the most people have ever seen one.
That's crazy.
Even with the clouds and stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So many folks. I think with the one in 2017 being so recent and everybody bragging about it, a lot of folks didn't want to miss this one.
I guess I should mention, I saw that there was a full moon in the eclipse. There was exactly in the area where the eclipse was the most visible. Mm-hmm. There were apparently the internet searches for why do my eyes hurt skyrocketed, because people didn't quite figure out that you're not supposed to stare right into it with no glasses.
And it gets confusing for sure. Yeah. I mean, the moment you wait for, they call it the diamond ring, because when the last deepest crater on the moon has a little bit of light, and it is just focused at that point.
Yeah.
It's a big ball of light, and then out it goes, and that's the time to take your glasses off.
Well, do tell, though, because I'm making fun of these poor folks, but the reality is that if it wasn't because I read it on some news thing, I wouldn't know either, and I don't know why. Why is it that the eclipse can mess with people's eyesight?
I think because once it's getting dimmer, because, the whole sky dims, and the shadows get weird, and the light gets weird, I think people get comfortable of kind of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it with your eyes,
without the glasses, you're not really going to see the crescent as it moves anyway.
Right.
I think they just get excited.
Yeah, because, I mean, to me, it's like, I remember there, I mean, technically there are things like, yeah, you're not supposed to stare at the sun. We forget the eclipse, just at the sun when the sun is out. You're not supposed to stare at the sun, that it actually damages your eyesight and stuff. But it's funny because, I don't know, a ton of people who have done it for extensive period of time and somehow they seemed okay. But the eclipse seemed to hit a lot of people badly, you know, when it came to the eyesight business. Like if they...
I think you just get excited. Or maybe they're partying a bit as it's coming along and just not paying attention. I mean, I set a telescope at the sun every day.
Right.
And you do a little quick glance to kind of know where it is. I mean, there's also tricks where you can use the shadows. To set up. Even though you still got to... That's not going to do it. You're going to have to do like an extended...
Real staring.
A few seconds at least.
I remember as a kid once, I think I was 14, I stared at the sun a bit too long.
Leave a little mark for a while.
I remember though it was awesome. I mean, again, please do not do that. Don't take my medical advice or really any advice about anything, but definitely not when it comes to this thing. But I remember in my experience, I had a blast because after that, the whole sky was psychedelic. It's like I was seeing like the clouds were green and everything was like, it definitely, but it messed with my eyes in a way that didn't damage them, which was, I guess, helpful.
I think so many people out there, I'm sure you're going to have people that don't have glasses and they're trying silly things.
People
like, look through Polaroid film and all this sort of like, oh, some really nice sunglasses will do it, but it simply will not. The filter that we use on our telescopes, they put 99% of the light.
Wow.
So even when you hold it up, you can barely see it in there. But, you know, you're going to put somebody up against an 11-inch telescope, it would be a laser
if
you didn't have it on there.
But, yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt the poetic narration of the eclipse.
Oh, no. We were just getting started, too. Crazy flight out, packed to the walls. We bounced through Dallas, and then we decided to go to Nashville because that was both the locations we had rented were about 7 hours away from that point. It quickly became clear that the weather was not going to cooperate.
Right.
Now, we do also have to mention that an hour and 15 minutes after we landed, we went to Monell's Southern food restaurant right there in the shadow of the Capitol building in Nashville. And I love this place because it is family style seating.
Right.
So it's 18 seats a table and nobody eats till the 18th seat is full. Now, if it's end of the day, there's a few people, as they're filling it up and you have no say of who you get to sit with.
Right.
So it's just this fantastic, I don't know, we should do it everywhere, but we loved it back in the news days because there would always be some state house representative or senator that you'd sit next to. You could hassle his ass. Out comes the food, biscuits and gravy initially just to get everybody warmed up. We were in the brunch mode. So then out came the smothered pork chops and three different kinds of fried, barbecued, and different chicken.
Serious Southern cuisine.
Oh, my God. Green beans that had probably more bacon in them than beans.
Jesus.
You know?
I saw a statistic the other day that was like giving, because, you know, like, I forget the exact age, but it's something like in the roughly mid-70s, the average lifespan in U.S., there was like almost 20 years difference between East, West Coast versus the South.
Oh, for sure.
South was like mid-60s.
Sure.
And then the coast was more like 80 or something. And
no, you can't do this every day. This was definitely a treat.
Yeah.
But I chased it, too. There's another, like, the next day, we had sort of like a free day. And I went back to Murfreesboro to look at MTSU. The campus had doubled. Like, things that were just... They've got their own business buildings, the gigantic nursing building. I mean, it's just incredible how much it's expanded. The library, which was this smaller thing, is a five-story monster now.
Yeah, of course.
And it was just fun to march around. And, you know, it was the distance of the campus before we got to the campus that existed when we got there.
Yeah, of course.
But more importantly, Murfreesboro is also home to the Clearview Cafe and Lunchroom.
Spectacular.
Probably the greatest soul food in the world.
Really? That good?
Well, I'm still looking for something to beat it.
So you are like, so you arrive and you have this culinary adventure where you're just stuffing yourself with the goods.
And then the people we're visiting are also like pulling out the magic. So it was just fantastic. Staying with folks that we hadn't seen in a long time. And then we made the good decision. Well, first, now we figured out we weren't going to be able to go to either of our locations. So just going straight west was the best thing we could do. And that was sort of, weren't really sure at the moment, but Cape Girardeau is a little town in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And that looked like the spot. So we knew we were going to head that way. But it gave us an extra day now that the plan was set. And we went to visit Gretchen's uncle and aunt, who we hadn't seen them in 12, 14 years.
Wow.
And it was just like, there's a few times in your life where you see somebody you haven't seen in a long time, and it feels like no time has passed.
Sure.
It was that exact sort of situation, right? Everybody was right back to where we were.
Yeah.
We had the best time just hanging out and showing off their giant piece of land. They're digging a pond, and they got to get it to about 12 feet for the fish to live, but like the frogs and everything are already in place. And I was like, man.
Nice.
In the middle of the night, out in the woods, this giant bullfrog, he's like, whoa. I was like, that frog might be able to eat you.
You know, I had the tiny frog. I hear this thing. I go look, and it's like glued to the glass outside my window, just hanging out.
Just hanging out?
And
little pale ones?
Yeah, I've never seen it like ear in or eye like that. It was beautiful. I was like, oh, this is amazing.
Just listening to them peep. Yeah, there's like a whole collection. There's little ones that are like, they're around the edge. Like, beep, 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 beep. And you walk up and they all dive in. But then there's the tree frogs going too.
And the frogs are beautiful. I like them. They're cool animals.
They're one of my favorites. Yeah, they don't seem to hassle anybody.
Yeah.
Take care of flies for us.
Yeah. I like frogs.
Just, no. I, you know, reptiles in general and amphibians in general. Don't want to be bit by a snake or a crocodile. But
no.
But they're usually minding their own business, too.
Yeah, I go more in the turtle. Turtles are beautiful.
Turtle's number one. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
I'm reading Yunro's book right now.
Oh, yeah, nice.
I feel like he wrote it for me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's a really great book.
That's very good.
When I get done, I'll have a book report for everybody.
It's called Turtle Planet. Yeah. Is that the title?
One of the many. He's got so many books.
Yeah. He seriously loves his turtles.
No, I don't blame him either. I still miss my turtle. I still hope she's hidden in a koi pond somewhere in the neighborhood, but...
You know, it's funny. When I was looking at my notes, I found this dream from like a zillion years ago that I wrote down. And I think we talked about it way back when. But I had this dream of him, of Yunro. Actually, he was eating a turtle.
Oh,
and then
God.
I woke up and I'm like, he's a vegetarian. He's vegan. He loves turtle. Why am I dreaming of him eating a turtle?
It's the opposite world.
I know, exactly. It
could never possibly happen.
I was like, okay, that's pretty funny. But yeah.
So then it was time. We were heading east. Just taking all the back roads, avoiding highways, just getting a flavor for it all. We spent the night in Paducah, Kentucky, and it was funny. This was a $100 hotel room because this was like in totality, but only like 50 seconds.
Yeah.
But the hotel room was $100. If we'd stay the next night, they wanted $600 for the next night. We said, no, we'll find another way.
That's insane.
Insane. But I figured there are fancy folks that can handle it that, you know, we happen to be capable of living without a bathroom for 12 hours.
Yeah. It's like we can manage.
We'll find a way.
Yeah.
There's always a bush to piss in.
Sleep in the car for $700. Are you insane?
That's exactly what we did. Now it was, you know, Cape Girardeau was a great location, and we knew that that would probably fit the bill. But as we were meandering through, first of all, Cairo, I don't think they say it that way, but it's funny, there's Memphis, Cairo, Alexandria, and Thebes, all in that little area.
It's funny. So it's like
little Egypt over there. Which, oddly enough, the next crazy eclipse in 4 years
will
go across Egypt.
Oh, that's funny.
Finishing in Luxor. Can you imagine?
That must be trippy.
But the temptation is it starts in Morocco.
Right.
I think I'd be more Morocco than Egypt.
Yeah.
Egypt seems a little more... Yeah. Sketchy may not be the word, but you're going to have some friends.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like any of those things. It's like it really depends. You know where to go. I remember I went, when I was a kid actually, once I went to Morocco because it's pretty close to Italy.
Yeah.
And
that was our thought, to hop across.
Yeah, and that was an experience in multiple ways. Like one of the things that I remember was sketchy. Well, there are several actually, but overall I enjoyed the place. But like one thing that was definitely sketchy is the back then, I don't know if it still goes on, but like back then the cops would just stop people on the street, ask for their passport or whatever ID, put it in their pockets, and then go like, how much to get it back?
Oh, no.
You know, literally just like that level of bribery.
Empty your wallet.
Yeah. Just like...
That's worst case scenario, man.
So that was... So in some places, you know, with cops, you have to watch out. Never mind. So there's that. So I remember that part. That part was like, everything else was cool. That part was sketchy.
Well, the temptation for this one is that's going to be over 6 minutes.
Wow.
So I had no idea and figured I would know a little more. Mm-hmm. They can go almost 10 minutes. It's all about if the moon is the exact size where still big enough to cover, but further enough in the middle of its distance that it can take its time, you can get almost 10 minutes.
I have a cool eclipse story for you, diving in the bag of history.
Excellent.
There's a tale of this one guy. At some point, maybe I'll do a history on fire, and it is related. He was the brother of famous American Indian leader Tecumseh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
His brother, Tenskwatawa. And Tecumseh was not that sold on his... I mean, he liked the political message of Tenskwatawa, which was like, we need to create this common native unity against American expansion. He was on board with that, but he didn't really buy Tenskwatawa's some more mystical claims of, the Great Spirit sent me this and that. He's like, I know you, you're my brother and you're dumbass. He's like, that's not... But there was this one thing that, I don't know how he played it, but it was brilliant. Is when Tenskwatawa was gaining this reputation as a prophet in the native communities, as having these mystical powers, and the governor of Indiana Territory at the time had heard about it. Uh-huh. And so he talked to some tribes and was like, this guy is full of it. You know, if he's really a prophet, put him to the test. Ask him to do something miraculous and amazing. And so, and they're like, okay, fair enough. That's a good point, you know. And so some of these guys went to Tenskwatawa and they're like, hey, you know, we like the message, but are you for real or are you just talking? And Tenskwatawa was like, yeah, no problem. I tell you what, why don't you guys just tell your friends to show up here on this date in my village, bring all your friends, and on that day, I will stop the sun. How about that?
Sure, and they were whatever.
Like, hey, if you can do that, we're down. We'll see you that day. We'll see. And sure enough, he comes out, does his whole thing, and there's an eclipse of the sun. And how he knew exactly the day and time. You know, some people had really good astronomical knowledge in the tribes. It could be that there was a scientific expedition that went through the area, maybe heard about it, and or for all I know, he stopped the sun. What the hell do I know, right?
Exactly.
But, like, it was a pretty big backfiring of the governor of Indiana challenge of, like, oh, let him do something miraculous. He's like, oh, no problem.
Take that.
Stop the sun. So I was like, that's a pretty sweet eclipse story.
I've always heard that Columbus pulled the same trick. Is that true?
I don't know. Never heard of that one. So I'm not saying he's not. Yeah. I haven't heard of it. So.
Before I hack everybody's arms off.
Yeah. Let me show. Yeah, no, that's an inter- at some point, that's another one I would like to do, like the actual Columbus stuff. Because, I mean, I know some.
Let's do it Dan Carlin style and rip all the Band-Aids off.
Yeah, but really doing a deep dive into the Columbus missions and the travel and the horror that befell the Taino.
Because didn't he have a monk with him that was recording it all? Or was that a different expedition?
No, there's definitely some, right? He even had his own diaries. And then there's a guy, a friend of his, who... Jesus Christ, that guy is disturbing. In his diary, he's just openly bragging, raping this woman and stuff. And so you're like, ooh, some of these people are not pleasant human beings, you know?
Isn't it amazing you can see a fellow human as subhuman?
Yeah, but the part that trips me out are the guys who write stuff like that.
Yeah.
With no problem.
Just put that crime down on paper. So
yeah, and because they know that there's never going to be an issue that... And somehow, and here's the weird part, where you read their words and they are justifying it to themselves in a way that it's all good. Like, what, somebody's going to have a problem with it?
She shouldn't wear those moccasins.
More or less. That's pretty much the vibe. And you're like, whoa, I don't know what world you lived in, but that's...
Sounds like... Toxic masculinity is nothing new.
Right? No, exactly. Okay, Eclipse Part 3. We are now
making our way. Oh, Cairo.
Yep.
An abandoned city of like, there's like 50, 60,000 people in the 50s into the 60s.
Yeah.
They lost their manufacturing before anybody else, probably because they were so far south.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you had the Mississippi, you could ship things that way, but that vanished. I think it's been 15 years since they've had a grocery store at this point.
Correct.
And not quite the Salton Sea, but every building is in collapse. There's hardly anybody there. The only people we actually saw was a dude, I kid you not, in a red pimp hat and a red suit with two dudes standing next to him at a broke down car wash.
Right.
That was pretty much the only people we saw. And it was just destruction, not really destruction, just decay.
Yeah.
All these, so just madness. So the southern part of Illinois, not quite in the greatest financial. But that was Cairo. And the next thing up was Thebes. And then Cape Girardeau is on the other side of the river. And as we approached 6-7 miles from where we're going to go over the river, a little sign, scenic outlook.
Okay.
Let's check it out. We come off. It is the Mississippi River. Got to be a half mile wide if it's an inch at that point. Giant railroad trellis right there. Train coming across as we pull up. And a little building up on the bluff. And it is the first place Abraham Lincoln ever performed any law at all was in that courthouse.
That's awesome.
So instantly we're like, looks like we found it. We kind of pulled over and just hung out for a while to get a feel for it. What was cool is it looked like at some point there were like RV hookups with like a water and electrical hookup. None of it worked anymore. But right along the shore right there, there's like 60 of those.
Right.
And there's some houses around, but we were still on roads that were listed on the map. There was a little baseball park. I'll tell you how old it was. It was so old that the playground still had a merry-go-round. It had teeter-totters.
Right.
It had death-defying, you know, climbing things where you could really lose some teeth.
Yeah.
The good shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just fascinating. So we're like, yeah, this is probably it. We weren't real comfortable with the idea of spending the night out in the country.
Middle to get of a, nowhere.
And knock on the window at 2 in the morning.
Of course.
What the hell are you all doing here? Yeah. So we went to Cape Girardeau, and once again, a barbecue brisket on a high-end, apparently Missouri and St. Louis, that makes its way out over there.
Yep.
And it rained all day, which was nerve-wracking.
Yeah, of course.
But all that rain was doing was clearing the field for
us. Nice, nice.
We noticed it was a Sam's Club, and there were a lot of RVs starting to show up. And we're like, this looks like the spot. Because obviously folks are spending the night. Most of them not in the back of the car.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a hysterical evening and just laughing. We steamed up the whole, this is literally raining off the glass inside from our breath and everything. And, you know, got to be morning time. We went back over to our newly found spot. As foggy as you could ever possibly imagine it. You couldn't see anything. You could hear the trains going over, but you couldn't see them. But you could also tell that the sun was going to win. So by 11 o'clock, everything cleared out. And then Pink Floyd comes across the river. Some guy on the other side of the river had hired a top-notch Pink Floyd cover band. They played the entirety of The Wall, took a 30-minute break, and then they played the entirety of Dark Side of the Moon that ended about 5 minutes before totality.
Those are the guys who deserve their money. They are putting it to good use. They deserve their money.
The guy that decided to point some speakers our way deserved his money.
Yeah.
And, you know, that whole time was spent just kind of, and there may have been 85 people there.
Yeah.
There are places where people were jammed in with 10, 15,000 people in these little fairgrounds.
That's fantastic.
As with many things these days, I'm finding, I feel we were almost led there.
That's fantastic. Where the original plan didn't quite pan out, but like the alternative plan was probably even better.
It was better than we ever could have put together.
That's fantastic. I love that.
And the eclipse itself just, apparently, because I've always, my description of the corona was always different from what we saw in Oregon, but we had a lot of smoke that day from fires. So it really did affect it. And I just never realized because I'd never seen the real thing. But when that corona came out, it is like ethereal, massive amounts of energy. The corona itself was 1.5 million degrees.
Wow.
And nobody knows why. Grand mystery, kids. This is, I tell all my fifth graders, lots of mysteries, and that's one to solve. Just like always. It's funny, the manliest man I had talked to, he wept when
that
it started.
That good, huh?
Yeah. It just brought him, and indescribable.
Yeah, you're part of this cosmic spectacle taking place. And
like they say, once you've stepped into the shadow, you never step all the way out.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of folks that had never seen it before, a lot of folks who had seen it before, and all of us who had seen it before, we can't possibly appropriately describe it to you, but I can't wait to hear what you have to say about it when it was over.
You know, the only time that I saw a real eclipse, I was a kid, and I was in Italy, I can't tell you what year it was. I'm sure we could figure it out because there are not that many.
I bet it was 78 or 9.
That early, huh? Okay. Yeah. I do remember it, though, going like, whoa, the sky is changing. You know, the sky is changing in a big way, and then it gets kind of chilly, and it gets dark.
You got it all.
And then suddenly you got the whole full sun again. But yeah, I was a little kid.
Yeah.
That was a trippy one. But
well, the next one, the one that's 2 years away, hard choices here, too. Iceland or Portugal and Spain?
Or I guess you said Morocco, Egypt.
That's 4 years.
That's 4 years. Okay, got you.
But we're going to all of them.
Yeah. So it's time to straighten out the passport and
we gotta go.
Get traveling. Yeah. No, that's fantastic. Just for the sake of color commentating, I'll tell you a couple of Abraham Lincoln stories since you mentioned. They are pretty funny because Lincoln. I mean, it's not like a hidden thing, but it's not like also the most well-known either. It's like he was a stud wrestler, apparently.
Yeah.
He was just this killer wrestler who was just unbelievably skilled as a grappler. And then there's a story of a Lincoln duel that's fantastic. Some guy challenged him to a duel.
Hamilton
and,
style?
And, well, that's the thing. Lincoln was like, well, you're challenging me, so I get to pick the place and the weapons.
Nice.
And the guy's like, okay, fair enough. And so he decided, because Lincoln was freakishly tall, so he decided we cannot cross it, we're going to stand on opposite side of this little creek, and we're going to use the swords. And, you know, they get there at this little creek, and the other guy's like trying to reach, and he's like, barely maybe I can reach Lincoln. And Lincoln has such a long reach that he just takes a swipe and chops down this branch on a tree on the opposite side. And the guy's like, on second thought, I think it was all a big misunderstanding and we can be friends. Because he was like, this is not a good duel. You have the reach, I don't. You can hit me, I can't hit you. No, we're not doing this.
That's awesome. I've never heard that
story. I hope it's true because I heard it. But, you know, like with many of these things, there are urban legends that float around. And this one, because I haven't done a history of fire, I haven't verified. But I love that story. I was like, I hope this one is a true one. What I am going to do, though, is at some point I was thinking doing a Lincoln assassination episode. Would be interesting because there's so much to that story. Yeah. There are all sort of conspiracies about it. There's all... I'm really curious on the uncovery. I mean, think about this poor bastard. His whole presidency was there in the Civil War, the entire thing.
Yep.
The Civil War ends. He's finally like, finally we can move on.
I'm just going to relax
and catch a show at the theater. And boom, that's not quite how it worked out. And the funny thing, too, is that he... Because it's the Civil War and he wants to appear as the reasonable guy and paint his opponents as these guys are crazy freaks, a mellow guy, he had hired, like he picked as his vice president.
The worst possible choice.
A guy who essentially was like 100% aligned with the South, except for actually going for it and being disloyal to the Union. But other than that, and Lincoln's approach was like, look, I can work with, in my own administration, I have people who are very different from me. I'm a reasonable guy, which was obviously a genius political move because the vice president doesn't do crap and has no power unless you get a bullet in the head and then he becomes the next president and you're screwed because now your cool PR move backfire.
Is Johnson one of the worst ever?
He was hated by the Senate and Congress with a passion, spent the next 3 years fighting with them to death because, you know, his agenda was 100% opposite to theirs. And, yeah, they hated each other big time.
Do you think Reconstruction would have gone better at least?
I mean, the part that's tricky, though, is that while he put every possible obstacle in the path of Reconstruction, also he was out by 1868. You know, by 1869, it was Ulysses Grant in charge. And they had, like, many more years of Reconstruction. And it went the way it went. So I feel like there was still plenty of room to do things right. But then that's where it gets crazy. The election of 1876 is so close.
Was it?
Both guys claim they won.
What?
Yeah. Because
that would never happen.
Because, you know, they are like head-to-head, recount, no, my recount. And, you know, it's only like not that many years. It's like 11 years after the end of the Civil War, and now you have two guys claiming to be president. It makes it for a little bit of a sketchy situation.
Wow.
And one candidate, Tilden, approached Hayes and was like, tell you what, why don't we solve it in a friendly way? I give in. I say that you won. I won't contest it. In exchange, you pull the troops out of the South and you put an end to Reconstruction. And Hayes think about it for about 0.2 seconds and is like,
deal.
Done. No problem.
Wow. Yeah.
It's getting less popular anyway. There was an economic crisis in 73, so there's less money to invest in this stuff. And now I just really want to be U.S. president. And yeah, screw Reconstruction. We're done. And that's how it's
amazing. Yeah. How just two assholes can wreck so much stuff.
Yeah. So that's how it played out. Crazy story. That's definitely
fantastic. Well, to wrap up the eclipse was over. Everybody scattered pretty quickly. We went and spent a good hour up in the courthouse because in addition to just the history of it, it was like the natural museum for that part, and just incredible fossils, things I'd never seen before, all kinds of great crystals and things, hundreds and hundreds of arrowheads and spears, spearheads. Some of those spearheads, I can't even imagine what those would be worth.
Giant.
Just giant. I guess you spearing a deer? I don't know what you would spear.
Depends how old they are.
Yeah.
Depends how old they are.
I don't think these were like super prehistoric or anything. Right. I think they were sort of up to...
But I mean, still, a spear is is not a little toy. That's for sure. Blades for a spear are serious stuff.
And impressive.
Yeah.
And the place was... And the little ladies running the place, they probably had more visitors in those 2 days than they had in a year.
Yeah, of course. Because everybody's going to town.
So proud of it. And take you down. The jail cells were still down in there. Yeah. And of course, Gretchen tried to lock me in, but...
Of course.
Didn't work this time.
Didn't work.
And luckily, because we had explored the back ways, we didn't have to tangle with the interstates till we got almost all the way into Kentucky. So where people were taking 12 and 14 hours, we did it in about 6 or 7.
Nice. That works.
And made it back home safe. It was completely outstanding. Of course, we're ready for the next ones immediately.
Sweet.
I can't recommend it enough because it's going to be 20-something years till we get another one here.
You got me thinking about spears. I actually, of course, because I'm a psychopath, I actually have a spear in my house, because you never know when you may need to...
A nice javelinly metal spear of modern times?
Yeah, of course.
Not Fred Flintstone flint?
No. Well, that would be cool, but no, modern deal. It's actually the same model. I read one this story, we mentioned it way back, it was many years ago on Dragon Taoist. This guy in Canada, I think it was British Columbia, was like in his house, a 60-some-year-old guy, just minding his business. His wife is in the backyard gardening, and she hears her scream and see there's this mountain lion has her by the head. And so he goes inside the house, grabs his spear, charges with his spear, and the mountain chases the mountain lion off with us. Talk about a manly thing. Today, what did you do? I saved my wife from a mountain lion attack by wielding my spear. That's a manly thing to do.
That is a manly thing to do.
That's the opposite of toxic masculinity, right? Yeah. That's like a healthy...
You can go save her real quick.
Yeah.
Away with you, mountain lion.
Yeah, so that's a pretty trippy one.
Speaking of mountain lions, they're going to shut the freeway down for a few days. They're going to put the bridge across...
For wildlife?
Yeah.
That's great. That's good.
It's just amazing, because apparently they need to trade off their DNA... Because there's two different pods, but there's not enough of them.
Crossing over. Yeah. I mean,
because they get run over and everything.
Yeah, freeways are the death of so many wild animals. It's terrible. You know, it's like, you need to have a pass. And it's funny, when you put a camera, when there are passes and you put a camera, you see all sort of cool stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be amazing.
So, since again, as I was mentioning, my entire social media feed is cool animals doing crazy things. I saw somebody put a camera on a giant log crossing a river, and so they had it there for a year. Man, the stuff that goes by in a year was insane. There were
thousands
bears
of things, right?
There were wolves.
Sure.
I forget where this was. I think it was like either Canada or somewhere in northern US, like Montana or something. There were anything from, you know, raccoons minding their business, to bears and wolves, to deer, to everything you could think of crossed on that thing.
That's completely awesome.
Yeah, and I was like, that's beautiful. And that's why you need wildlife passes. Here we're not talking about a river, but when you talk about the freeway, so many animals get hit all the time. It's terrible.
Yeah,
it's really like, that's one of the things that freaked me out when doing trips cross country in US. We've seen how many deer you see that on the side of the road because they get hit by a car, and absolutely terrible. It's one of those. I mean, actually, apparently, a lot of humans die in those encounters because they crash the car and they go swerving and stuff. But of course, terrible for humans, terrible for animals, terrible for everybody. So having freeway passes is a huge one. It's important.
Well, like down in towards Nashville, in the more populated areas, there's so many homeless people living on the fringe of the forest that they're chasing the deer into traffic.
Oh, that's terrible.
I mean, they were everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's terrible.
6-7 a day just wandering around, seeing them on a freeway.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's terrible stuff. On a different front, I'll tell you. So the other day, Isabella is like rediscovering, like, by now what feels like old stuff. Remember when, what year was it when the TV series Lost came out?
Oh, God, that's going to be 20 years.
Early 2000?
Easily, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So I hadn't seen it in forever, and she wanted to see a little bit. So I'm like, let's watch it together, you know. So we started out episode one, season one.
I remember the first season being great.
I forgot how damn good it was.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the way it's written, the characters, the acting, it was unbelievable. It was also hit me emotionally because I think like I watched it with my wife, and then the person that I talked with the most about it was my dad. And so like two people very close to me that for whom that series was a big deal, and I shared it with her, both gone. So as I was watching it, it kind of hit me emotionally in a way that I did not anticipate because of those things. But beside my personal thing, it's just amazing. Show is just like, it hooks you in. And now I do remember, and it's going to happen in the later season, that after a while it just stopped making any kind of sense whatsoever.
They lost their way.
And that is a little bit of a letdown because, you know, there's so many mysteries that they never bother to... Like, it's easy to build that mystery if you don't have a solution.
They never told
the
smoke monster. I mean, come on. That was from the very beginning almost.
Yeah. However, I do also remember, and I'm curious to see how it's going to be on a rewatch, that I kind of stop caring about that. Like, when I stop caring about the story making sense, which is usually a fairly important part of anything you watch, is like you want it to make sense. But I think I enjoy the characters so much.
Oh, yeah.
That after a while, I was like, yeah, I don't even care. I just want to see these characters on screen doing whatever. Easy, in fact, once in a while, was asking me questions about, it's like, I don't remember. I don't know that we'll ever figure that out. But again, stop thinking in those terms. Or
those answers were lost.
Yeah, for real, in a literal kind of way. But one that was funny too is I remember, like, she was asking me things about, like, you know, they introduce these characters, and it's like, she's like, oh, this guy seems like a dick. And I'm like, it's a little more complicated than that, because that's what Lost did masterfully. They showed you a character in a certain light. You think you figured them out.
And then it's backstory time.
And then they show you a whole backstory that changes everything you think about that character.
Yeah.
In both ways. The good character said some shady, disturbing things. The bad one did some great stuff, or you understood why they are the way they are. And when you get really comfortable one way, then they float back. It was constantly keeping you on edge with the characters in a way that really... I don't want to say for the first time on TV, because I'm sure people have done it before, but I did feel that they made it such a central piece of the whole series, like really developing three-dimensional characters in a way that have so much depth to each of them.
Yeah.
That I don't remember too many things before Lost that try to do that to that degree. And I remember, like, yeah, this is amazing. This is so. I've been watching a little bit of the early days of Lost, and this is one thing that has not aged. Like, even watching it now, whatever many years, 20 years later or something, I'm like, oh, if it came out today, I would be glued to the television screen wanting to know what's happening next.
No, people were hooked. We loved, and it was long, like six seasons,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was a long one. It was definitely long. I think it was one of the first TV series that had that almost viral impact where everybody was talking about it. It was that kind of the Game of Thrones effect, sure, where Lost had it in a big way. And yeah, that was fun. That was fun. So, I mean, I enjoy sharing with these things that are not just from, you know, the last 2 years, but going back. Like, you know, we watched the other day, I went to find, remember that movie by Akira Kurosawa, Yojimbo? Yojimbo is like, has been remade a zillion times. Like, the most famous remakes are Clint Eastwood movies.
Oh.
And then Bruce Willis did a fantastic version with Walter Hill called The Last Man Standing, without really changing a thing other than the setting. You know, like, Yojimbo is set in Japan a few hundred years ago, is a samurai story. Bruce Willis set it with the same exact dynamics, except it's not a samurai story. It's like 1920s at a border town during the middle of Prohibition and gangsters fighting one another. And the whole premise of the story is essentially like there's this one guy who's clearly a badass, a bit in the Japanese version is a ronin, is this masterless samurai. In the, both the Clint Eastwood and Bruce Willis version, he's a gunslinger, one in the Old West, one in Prohibition 1920s. And he arrives in this town that's wrecked by the fight between these two gangs competing with one another. And the whole premise is that the lead character is going to keep playing the gangs like he's going to join one side. Oh, no way, he just joined the other. No way, he just went back. And he's constantly playing these two gangs in a way as, you know, he has his own agenda. And, man, like, I don't remember the Clint Eastwood movies as much, but, like, the Bruce Willis one was great. And the original, I think, is from 1960 or something.
Really?
So black and white and masterful. Really, really, really fun.
Have you had a chance to see, probably not yet, but it's coming out on DVD and on demand shortly, Godzilla Minus One?
Oh, yeah.
It's just these guys, I mean, it's a little Japanese film company. Yep. They did all old school practical effects mostly on it, and it is genius.
Really?
It's about a kamikaze pilot who decided to land, and it's sort of his story, and then the aftermath of the nuclear attacks have caused Godzilla to rise up. But a lot of these effects do look like they would, well, it looks like it was made in the 1950s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the genius of it. But then the next thing they did a re-release immediately after Godzilla's Minus One, Minus Color, and the black and white one.
It's amazing.
Maybe the greatest thing Godzilla-wise I've ever seen.
Yeah,
they won the Oscar for special effects on that one.
I am. That's awesome.
And it's not because they look perfect. It's because they look perfectly like the ships. They definitely look like models, but there are moments where Godzilla's down on all fours and coming at you, and like these things we've never seen before, and not all clunky. And you know, I know it's just a Godzilla movie, but man, was I happy!
That sounds good.
One.
That black
because there's a terrible one out right now.
Which one?
Godzilla times Kong, or just some piece of garbage?
Yeah.
But this was great. These people loved it.
Checking out.
Yeah, that one's definitely worth it because you know it's a Japanese made, as it should be.
That black and white thing is fun. Even in my all-time favorite video games, Ghost of Tsushima, they have what they call the Kurosawa option because it, the aesthetics are very much like a Kurosawa movie.
Yeah.
So it becomes black and white with these weird aesthetics that so you can play it regular with colors, which is amazing. Or you can play it like you're watching a whole-time Kurosawa movie in black and white. And
yeah, that last Mad Max movie, they did a release in black and white.
Did they? Same kind of concept.
Oh, man. Yeah. You remember all the oranges and blue, but all that stuff. They did a very careful transition to it.
There are things you can do that are... I mean, I remember watching some masterful black and white movies where clearly the use of... like, don't get me wrong, I love colors in movies.
Sure.
What adds texture, it adds warmth, it adds... But, like, there was one movie... I think maybe it was The Passion of Joan of Arc, or it was a Joan of Arc movie from the late 1920s.
So
super old.
Yeah.
And most of the whole thing is just close up on the actors' faces. But it's so the lighting, the faces, the acting is so good. It almost has a psychedelic effect when you watch it. It's so beautiful. So, rather than feeling like you're watching like a shitty theater production, you know, it's like it's something else entirely.
Was it late 20s and it was a talkie or was it silent?
Nope, silent.
Oh man, some of those silent movies are just incredible. And the fact we've lost like 95% of them.
There's a bunch. That lady who did Renee Falconetti was the actress, and they say that she was she had some mental issues, and somehow maybe that helped her play Joan of Arc in this way that was just unbelievable how good it was. It, like, her acting performance was just like jaw-dropping effect. So sometimes rediscovering old stuff, and especially with kids, because for them is new, and so you know, for me it's like I get to go back to things I'd seen a million years ago and watch again.
It's always fun. It's always fun to share stuff. I like to pull stuff out and just, you know, you have to see this. Sit
yeah,
down and watch.
I mean, there's stuff that is like, they are classics, you know, once in your life. It's now that she got through Yojimbo, that she had fun, but you know, Yojimbo is a normal movie, it's like hour and 40 or something. The next test is to go the real Kurosawa stuff is The Seven Samurai, which is 3.5 hour long, but it's a masterpiece. So maybe we'll break it up in a few days. But
Lawrence of Arabia is another one that's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
There's a scene in there where there are like 500 stuntmen on horses alone.
Yeah.
Can you imagine just gathering that together for once? Oh, wait, cut.
Yeah. No,
7,000 people out there.
Yeah, there's no CGI there. That's the old days.
I'm working on a movies podcast for some of these folks, and it's called Movies With ... and it should be starting shortly. But we had this guy, Michael Grillo.
Mm-hmm.
This dude wanted to get in the movies. He didn't really, you know his way. Got a job in the mailroom at Paramount. And his first job was like on Kojak and some of these older shows. But he ended up on The $6 Million Man, which made me terribly jealous. Just working as a...
Of course.
He'd gotten into the Directors Guild trainee program. So they move you from studio to studio. Yeah. And he was being taken away from $6 Million Man. Well, $6 Million Man, Farrah Fawcett was Lee Major's girlfriend in those days.
Yeah.
And the Charlie's Angels ladies would come by on occasion. And he very much did not want to leave this.
I can imagine that.
So he gets sent over to Fox to go to some stupid movie that he didn't want to be on. His first job, he's got to be there at 3 in the morning. Some actor's getting prosthetics. And he's there to feed him and let him drink his drink. That movie was Young Frankenstein.
Yep.
And this dude just stepped right into it. His next movie was The Deer Hunter.
Wow.
Then by the time he was like becoming more of a producer and thing, Body Heat, Silverado, list was insane. And the last thing he did was the Endgame movies for Marvel. This guy's career, just everything he did was gold.
Hold the doors open.
But the beautiful thing that he said, you know, when he's the guy, well, what made me think of that is on some of these big battle moments, and there would be 3,000 people on set.
Jesus.
And he said one day, everybody's set up, about to start shooting, there's tornadoes coming.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So what do you do?
Yeah.
First of all, you can't freak everybody out.
Yeah.
You certainly don't want everybody to get killed.
Yeah.
So while this is all, you're going to get some shots because it's pretty far away, but it's still on its way. He somehow corrals 60 buses that'll be enough to move everybody out if they have to. But you don't want to alarm anybody. But you definitely don't want to lose a couple hundred people on us.
Of course.
And just the pressure of that, man. And it's like every day is that way on these huge movies.
Insane.
So there's these folks that can handle it. But he has a great bite that I'll remember forever because it's just nice to know that somebody on the top actually believes this. Mm-hmm. When you have just your base crew is probably 120 people, everybody's important.
Yeah.
You know, people may not have glorious jobs.
Sure.
But the guy putting the lights up, got to make sure they're not going to fall. The guy laying the cable, you know, they all have to be great at what they do.
Yeah.
When you treat folks that way, you create this sort of esprit de corps.
Yep.
That makes everybody, I mean, fucking 16-hour days are no joke.
No, it's brutal.
And for 6-8 months?
It's insane.
And it's the only way I think they do it is they all feel like they're an important part of the team.
Yeah, of course.
And if the guy on top makes you feel like you're integral.
Yeah.
And he also said a lot of times some of the best ideas for a solution to something that's not working could be the guy that's the focus puller or something.
Of course. Hey, why don't we do it that way? Yeah, no, totally.
It just seems like a really nice way to run things. And I'm certain there are a lot where it's just screaming and yelling and shut up.
I'm sure. I mean, 16-hour days, that many people, you're going to run into some drama for sure. But it's important. I think that's when, even related to our usual discussion about loneliness, I think that's one of the things that people thrives the most when they feel they are part of something.
For sure.
In a way, we are DNA built to be part of a small team that works together for a common purpose. In the old days, it would have been survival of your tribe, you know?
Yep.
But, I think that's what we are sort of hotwired for. It's what we're built for. So it makes sense that being part of it. And of course, when these things end, it's like, holy shit, it ended, because now it was your life. You know, it was how you see everything. But
this is the craziest thing, because you never do know. And will I ever have another job? Yeah. Will there ever be another movie? I mean, it's such a cliffhanger.
And even if you do, it's like that experience. Imagine like the guys who film Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
So they spend whatever long they spend,
years.
2 years or something, yeah. Whatever long filming all together. You have a production. Like these guys, you see them, as you say, 16 hours a day, and then it's over. And you shake hands, and everybody's going to go to their lives.
And you never see most of them again.
And that's rough. That's a hard, hard thing to deal with. It's a beautiful experience, I think. It's like people who get to have that is fantastic.
Yeah.
But it's also a hard one.
Well, it's just like Pastor Paul was saying, like when the football was over,
yeah,
nobody came calling.
No.
It was over.
Yeah. And that's a rough transition. It's the same reason why, I mean, and again, we're purely talking about the interpersonal dynamics. Of course, we're not comparing that. But like people in the military who have 2, 3, 4 years with the same guys,
And
then everybody gets their papers and leave and go to regular life. It's a hard transition to go through. So it's, that's a trippy one.
We're definitely creatures of habit.
Yeah, yeah. And you find meaning in being part of a group. It's something that helps human beings find meaning, for sure. Speaking of tribes and meaning, I saw, and earlier we were talking about animals, I saw the coolest thing recently. I went up to Big Bear, and, you know, it's April in Southern California, but it was snowing heavy.
Yeah, Mount Baldy still got snow on it.
And it was pretty cool, because we were walking around in the forest, and it started snowing heavy while we were in the forest. So it was pretty magical because we weren't too deep in. So we had no issue of we're making back easy. But it was beautiful because you get to see it. And we got to, and we ran into the, not what you picture as an animal when you picture hiking in the forest. We saw these wild donkeys.
Really?
Yep. Donkeys that probably were, I don't know, maybe escape or left behind generations ago, but they are completely wild. They live on their own. There's no, and they have their own little donkey tribe. And there's like one of them was pregnant. The other ones are kind of protecting her. There's all this. And there's this little donkey tribe hanging around the outskirts of Big Bear, living in the forest, going through the streets, knocking people's cans over to get some food out of it and so on. And seeing these donkeys in the snow was so beautiful. Like the images were, like Savannah took a couple of pictures. They were amazing.
Wow.
They were really, really beautiful animals. And I was feeling bad because I'm like, poor guys, they have to deal. I mean, in the mountains, there are no jokes. You have to deal with bears. You have to deal with mountain lions. There's real stuff. But somebody was telling me, I mean, yeah, sure, true. But donkeys are no joke. Yeah. They can defend themselves pretty
and they can bite
well.
Too.
Yes. They kick. If you get kicked by a donkey, it's bad news. You know.
I've been trying to avoid that.
Yeah, it's not a... In Italian, I don't know if they say it in English too. In Italian, actually, it's an expression to say that somebody can...
kick like a mule?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same in English, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think the universal abilities of mules to kick you into tomorrow are recognized across cultures.
Were they kind of feral looking and matted, or were they just as clean
little
as you?
Little matted.
So they weren't
matted.
Quite...
Yeah, I'll show you. Okay, this is where having a podcast and not a video thing doesn't work, because I'm going to show you something that nobody else got to see.
Sorry, folks.
But
some folks are just lucky.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll show you these guys. Yeah, they're beautiful.
Oh, you might have to enter that photo into the Ventura County photo competition at the fair this year.
I didn't know that there was one.
There
but
is
I'll send
one.
It over to you.
Oh, no.
Yeah. This is before it snows. There's a picture where we caught them on the way up the mountain, and it's before it snows. And then we came back down, we saw them again, and there was the snow one.
That's an amazing picture.
That is an amazing picture. That's
That might have to be the show picture. Yeah. Or a secondary one. Wow.
Yeah.
So keeping their distance, not really worried about you.
No, just minding their business, but also like...
I wouldn't be approaching them.
No, definitely not. They're probably going to kick you into tomorrow, but... But it was beautiful. I was like, wow, they're such beautiful animals.
So we run short on time. Your Japan visit's coming up.
Yep, indeed.
Give us a little preview of that.
It's going to be interesting because I've never been part of a tour. And in this case, it's a tour through the guys at Geek Nations. And so they have everything planned out of where we go every day. There's a lot of walking around. So I hope my stamina holds for long it lasts. But yeah, I'm... Savannah is super excited. I'm the worst person ever. I don't even know if I need to qualify it. Maybe I'm just the worst person ever, period. But I'm definitely the worst person ever when it comes to change, adventure, and stuff. I'm like,
out of your comfort zone?
My cozy pillows. I want my home. I want to. So unfailingly, when I'm faced with something like this, my first reaction is, oh, no. Fear, but at the same time, I know it's going to be a blast. I know it's going to be fun.
Is there something you're looking forward to seeing the most? Are you going to see Ikiru's temple?
Yeah. Yeah, that's on the first day.
I can't wait to see that. That's, send me that picture. I can't
I'm
wait.
I'm probably going to film some stuff. Maybe I'll put it on YouTube too and something.
Yeah,
but,
or do a little video, do a little diary.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Just audio would be cool.
So this should be, but yeah, we're going to see there's in Shogun, we were talking about it before we started recording in the TV series. They show you Osaka Castle.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, granted, that castle got burned multiple times since then, so this is rebuilt. But apparently, modern-day Osaka Castle is still a masterpiece to look at.
Really?
So we're going to go there. So we're going to see some cool things, for sure. And I have no idea what to expect when it comes to... I mean, I've never been to Asia, period, let alone Japan. So I have no idea what to expect.
Seems like a great place to start.
Yeah, indeed.
Which island do you land on?
So we are going to be, we'll land in Osaka, and then we're going to spend the first few days in Kyoto. And then after that, it's just running around all over the place.
Wow.
But it's all south of Kyoto. So I actually don't even get to see Tokyo, which is...
Really?
Yeah. We're never going to make it there. It's just going to be...
Save that for next time.
Yeah, exactly. So so that's what's coming up. But we know what the next episode is going to be about.
Excellent.
It's all a full report on Japan.
Last but not least, I just wanted to mention my editing mentor who brought me, who changed our lives and brought us out to California. He passed away a couple of days ago. 77 years old, riding his bicycle. He had a serious wreck like 4 years ago, smashed his femur.
Yeah.
And rehabilitated, right back on it. And apparently he just had a massive heart attack riding his bike. And that was that.
And that
I
was
can't
that.
Imagine he would have had a more preferable way of going out. Because he loved riding that bike as much as he loved making movies.
And you're still in good enough shape to do it.
Oh, yeah.
You're not
he's the most fit person I've ever met in my
life. That's great. That's great.
Just a fantastic guy. He gave me an opportunity that nobody else could have. And
sweet.
He changed my life and I'll always appreciate it. So... Rest in peace, Edgar.
Beautiful.
Well, the funky music means one thing. That's the end of another fine episode of the Drunken Dallas Podcast. It was indeed a grand adventure. Nice chat with Bill Ellie today. What's even more exciting is the next episode, which we're going to record like 6 hours from now, is Savannah and Daniele's triumphant return from their visit to Japan. I've seen the pictures, lots of smiles, but I cannot wait to hear the stories. That will be the next episode in a couple of weeks. So until then, everybody be well. Looking forward to talking to you again soon, and have a great day. Bye. Would you like to hear a terrible story?
Yes, always.
One day the rod shall teach you.
What have we learned this week?
Be calm, be kind, be brave.
Yep, words to live by. See you guys.
Ta-da!
D-B-O-L-E-L-L-I.
Good shit.
R-I-C-H-I-M-O-N, and the numeral 1. And so ends another awesome episode of the Drunken Taoists podcast. Be sure to keep your ears peeled for another mind-expanding episode coming soon. We'll be tweeting you as they come out. You can keep track of Daniele at D Bolelli. That's D-B-O-L-E-L-L-I. And you can find me on Twitter at Richimon1. R-I-C-H-I-M-O-N and the numeral 1. We'll see y'all soon. Woo!